And good evening. My name is Carrie Michael, and you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas on KABF 88.3 FM. October is Disability Employment Awareness Month. And earlier today, the guests on our show tonight did a webinar about disability and employment and what we do at Disability Rights Arkansas to help folks who are entering or re-entering the workforce find competitive and integrated employment. However, we're going to do something a little bit different. We will post the recording of that webinar. We want everybody to listen to it, but I've got Jen Goodwin and Molly Hernandez here with me now. And I want to tell you a little bit. Earlier today, they did this webinar and they do a lot of talks. They have kind of a traveling roadshow. And they talk about their own experiences, their personal experiences with disability. They've talked about this, but they've never told their stories fully in these presentations. And if I'm being honest, I have never fully heard their stories. So Jen and Molly are here to share with us their disability stories. So this is my first time hearing this too. I want to tell you a little bit about Jen and Molly though. So Jen Goodwin is an attorney with Disability Rights Arkansas. Molly Hernandez is a rehabilitation counselor and an advocate at DRA. And the two of them primarily work with our client assistance program and a couple of other programs to help people with disabilities access the resources that they need to find competitive and integrated employment. That may be education services, it may be assistive technology. I'd love for the two of you all to tell us a little bit more about what we do, about what you all do, and then we'll hear your stories. So quickly, we're excited to be a part of KABF's weekly Speak Up Arkansas program. We're here to encourage dialogue about the issues that matter most to people with disabilities, their families and caregivers, and to educate the public about these issues. To make Arkansas a truly inclusive state where everyone's personhood and contributions are valued. The show is pre-recorded, so we won't be taking calls, but we always welcome your questions and comments. So you can give us a call at 800-482-1174, or you'll find us online at www.disabilityrightsar.org. We're also on Facebook at Disability Rights AR and on Twitter at DR Arkansas. Jen Goodwin and Molly Hernandez, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we're excited to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you here. And you know, like I told our listeners, we're gonna wade out into the deep end of this a little bit. We have Jen and Molly unplugged, folks. So you know, before we get into all this, Molly, quickly tell us a little bit about the work that you and Jen do at DRA.
Sure, absolutely. So of course, as an agency, we strive to vigorously advocate for and enforce the legal rights of Arkansans with disabilities. Specific to the work that Jen and I focus on is the fact that we're trying to remove barriers to employment. We want to see people with disabilities engaging in all areas of the community, and employment is a big part of that. So you know, we look at navigating resources, sometimes navigating discrimination. It just really depends on the situation when you're looking at employment and the type of disability, what barriers could come up. So we really try and help remove those barriers so people can just be a regular part of the community. That's what we all want.
Awesome. And Jen, earlier today, and we're recording this before it happens, but early, you know, so talking kind of almost into the future, you know, there will have been a webinar that you all did. Tell us a little bit about what you're covering in the webinar. And I want to tell our listeners that we will be posting the recording of that webinar. So, you know, again, check us out at disabilityrightsar.org. But Jen, what will you be covering?
So we are talking a little bit about the employment process and the employment laws that go along with that, some specific to Arkansas and some just more general as well. And then we're also talking about the vocational rehab process and the steps that should happen and the services that are offered there. And then also about how we can help whenever things don't go according to plan and what our step in this process is as well and how we can help.
Fantastic. Okay, so that is great. And again, in our show notes, when we post this show online, we will be posting in the show notes where you can hear the recording of that webinar. And hopefully you joined us earlier today by the time you hear this. So both Molly and Jen, you go around and you do a lot of presentations on these topics. And in those presentations, you talk a little bit about your own disabilities. We do a lot of work with people who, you know, lots of people are born with disabilities, you know, grow up with disabilities. Others come by their disabilities later in life. And that was the case for the two of you. So, you know, we're here, you know, kind of hearing a bit about your stories for the first time. Why is it important, why is it important to get this information out? And Jen, I'll lead off with you.
I was going to say, it's just really important for people to understand what life can look like with a disability, whether you were born with it or you acquire it later in life. Still have a fulfilling life, and you can still do what it is that you want to do, whatever your hopes and dreams are. You can find a way to make it work, and sometimes you need some help along the way to do that, and that's part of what we're here for, because we've had the help that we've needed along.
I think Jen froze up. Molly, do you want to take up?
Sure, absolutely. So, and this is something we'll really get deep into as we talk, but you know, this discussion is important because life can change in an instant. You'll hear that from Jen, or, you know, there's a moment in a doctor's office where you can hear that life may not change in an instant, but it's going to change. And it's how you equip yourself and prepare yourself. And it resiliency, sometimes it's innate, sometimes it's learned. And it's making sure that you have that support network to be able to achieve the life you want. You know, I heard this saying somewhere, and so I'm totally taking it, but it's, we want to make sure that you're living your life by design, not by default. You know, I didn't plan to be a blind woman, but it's the life I have, and I'm going to live it to the best I can. So again, I hope everyone takes that to heart, that live your life by design, not by default. You can live the life you want.
I've been quoted in the past as saying something along the lines of, if someone else thinks they can live my life better than me, then more power to them. And that's kind of just been my motto in life, is I'm going to do what I want to do to live the best life possible. And I feel like things have fallen into place with that mentality. And I do think it helps along the way.
And, I love that. We talk about disability visibility, and I think the more people see people like Jen and myself, or so many other people with disabilities who are doing phenomenal things and not letting, you know, whatever challenges they're experiencing in life stop them. I mean, that's what normalizes our inclusivity, you know, that you're saying, hey, there's Jen, there's Molly. We don't want to be I don't know how to say this the great way. We don't want to be what's not the norm. We want, you know, children to look and say, hey, there's a lady in a chair, or there's a lady with a guide dog, and see that as normal, not like, oh, wow, what are they doing here? So again, it's just, it could be any one of us at any time. You know, we want the best for everyone in life, but just to always have that knowledge that, yeah, it could happen, but you can still be okay.
Definitely.
That's so important for, you know, for things like this to get across. So we're talking about disability employment awareness, but both of you had careers prior to your disability. Jen, you want to lead off? Tell us a little bit about kind of what things were like before and what happened and what they're like now.
Sure, absolutely. So prior to my injury, I went to University of Arkansas in Fayetteville for my undergrad degree. Got a degree in marketing management, and Did study abroad in Australia. I was the most independent person that you could imagine. I mean, I was bungee jumping and scuba diving and skydiving and just living life to the fullest and looking for that adrenaline rush at any turn that I could find, and just had so much fun. And so I think I gained so much independence during that time period in my life that whenever I got ready to graduate from college with my degree in marketing management, I decided I was ready to branch out a little bit from Arkansas. And so I moved with a friend to Las Vegas, Nevada, and started a job in sales there. So I was in outside sales. My territory was pretty much the United States of America. So I was all over the place from California to Ohio. I never knew where I was going to be from week to week, but I literally lived in a hotel for a year and a half that I worked that job. So I was constantly in different places and meeting new people and finding new experiences. I'd try to find, you know, what was happening in each city that I was in, and had a lot of fun, but I was ready to come home too. I was ready to see people that I knew on a regular basis and could have real deep conversations with instead of surface level on a daily basis. And so I ended up taking a job back in Arkansas, where I moved back here, and I was a drug rep. And so I was in doctor's offices every single day. I was in 10 different offices a day. I was bringing lunch and breakfast and dinners to people. And so I felt like that job was made for me. I love talking to people, I love meeting people, and just absolutely had a blast. And so I always said I couldn't sell pills without my heels. And so I had my 4-inch stilettos and my little dress on every day and just had a lot of fun with that job. And so life is a little different now, but it was fun back then. So I just want to give a little background of where I come from.
What about you, Molly? What was your life like before?
Okay, so before, and mine is a little different because Jen can have that from one day to the next experience on life before disability and life afterwards. I'm blind, but I'm blind due to a degenerative retinal disease. So my disability, there's no particular day that I can actually say, this is who I was before, this is who I was after. It's all very much intertwined. But I can tell you that when I was in college, we started putting together some pieces of things that we should have noticed through my childhood that didn't add up with what I could see and what I couldn't see. And when I was in college, I was diagnosed with a degenerative eye condition that is now formally known as cone rod dystrophy, a form of retinitis pigmentosa. But we had no history of blindness in my family, so we didn't really have any reference points to know what that diagnosis meant. So while I was in college, I was studying to be a speech language pathologist. And we can talk a little more about, you know, how things changed from there. But I ended up getting I got my degree in speech language pathology, but I certified to teach. So I was actually an elementary school teacher, but all of this does connect to my story and disability. But my career before was as an elementary school teacher. I also did some times teaching English as a second language. From teaching in the regular classroom, I moved into being a literacy interventionist, which was a reading teacher that worked with those kids that needed just that little extra boost, that extra attention to make sure that they were able to access the curriculum. So that was my background in education.
So when, and Molly, we'll just stick with you since we're kind of rolling. So So you were a teacher, and when did you start to notice that this was going to be hard?
You know, it's I knew it was going to be hard in college. I just didn't realize how hard. The diagnosis I was given was almost a wait and see diagnosis because we didn't have any reference points in my family. I didn't know anyone who was blind. When you talked about people who were blind, my thoughts went to the TV show Little House on the Prairie, the books. I would think of Mary or Stevie Wonder or Ray Charles. Those were the images that came to mind. And I would think, well, that's not me. That doesn't fit. I can still see. I'm still driving a car. Just certain things are hard. And, you know, this is something I'm, since we're recording this in the past for the future. In our webinar, I think we'll discuss a little bit about where you fit in the world of disability, because I think that's where a lot of people get lost and miss some key services, because I didn't know how to explain to the Disability Resource Center. I hardly knew the Disability Resource Center existed on the university level. This is where transition services are so key when you're talking to that younger age group as they're looking for what they're going to do after high school or after college. So anyhow, long story short on that, I needed a master's degree to be able to be a speech language pathologist. But I went to college in Arkansas in a rural area. And if I wanted to do the master's degree, I was going to have to drive to all these rural locations for clinical sites. And I was having to restrict my driving, but I did not know that I should even communicate that to anyone to say, hey, is there something different we could do? I still want this degree, but I don't know what to do. So I graduated with my bachelor's, moved home, and was like, well, what else can I do? And I found out about the non-traditional licensure to be able to go ahead and get a teacher's license and start teaching in my hometown, things that were familiar, easy. All this time, my vision was still changing, but I could still see. And I didn't know how to communicate, you know, any of that. I thought, well, if you're not blind, then you can see. And I didn't understand the world of vision impairment or how any of that worked. So I did start teaching. And as my vision changed, I hit it because I couldn't explain it. And I think this is where, you know, guess who had a preconceived notion of what disability is? I certainly did. I thought, yeah, disability is this one thing and it's people not like me. And so I wouldn't talk about it. I had an element of shame. I had to quit driving. So what did we do? Well, fortunately, by the way, in the meantime, I did fall in love, get married, things like that. I did all the normal things. Meanwhile, the elephant in the room was that Molly was going blind. You know, I didn't talk to my parents about it. I didn't talk to my spouse. We knew I had this diagnosis, but we ignored it. We just did what we had to do to get through. So I bought a house next door to the school where I taught. And I would, that way I could walk to work. No one had to know that I couldn't drive, because that embarrassed me. I didn't want people to know. I would stay late and after hours at my school and go into the teacher's workroom to enlarge anything that I would have to read for school with my students the next day. I would blow it up as big as I could and then keep that hidden, because that was embarrassing. When it was, and keep in mind, we're talking a decade of life. So it's not like these changes were happening overnight. And I got to the point where walking to school with the sidewalks, so people wouldn't think that maybe I was the intoxicated teacher walking to school, because I had these were large sidewalks, but I couldn't stay on them. I couldn't see the difference between the sidewalk and the grass. That contrast was disappearing. I would pretend that I was on my telephone so that if someone stumble or walk off the sidewalk, they'd be like, oh, she's distracted. You know, I put a lot of energy into hiding the fact that I couldn't see. I had two babies. They're teenagers now, so you know how much time has passed. And any teacher will tell you can't get it all done in a day. So sometimes I'd have to go back to work at night. And one time I walked back to school using the big double stroller to take my kids and, you know, enlarge my stuff in secret. And, you know, I knew the end was coming. I knew it was getting so hard to fight, but I thought, blind people don't work. Blind, you know, am I blind? What am I? You don't see disability people with disabilities in the workplace. I mean, my vision, so to speak, was very narrow in a lot of senses, you know. So I back to being at school with my kids and their big double stroller and then walking back home. And I want to preface the fact that it was a very quiet neighborhood. No one was in extreme danger, but it was a big turning point for me. I was pushing that stroller home late one evening. And as I was looking down, because when you're losing vision the way I do, you worry where your next step is. I might be able to see something at a distance, but I could walk off a cliff in the meantime. And I was walking, trying to get back home and, you know, do all the mom things. And I looked down and I thought, well, that's yellow underneath me. And I realized I was walking down the center of the street with my children in a stroller walking on the yellow dotted line.
Whoa.
And that was the moment where I was like, this has gone too far. It's time to regroup. I did ultimately make a visit to my ophthalmologist. I was a non-compliant patient. I jumped around to different optometrists to be able to get contacts and have those prescriptions refilled. But the moment anyone wanted to talk about my retina, I was out of there, you know, until finally I did go back to my retinal specialist. And I just told him, I cried. I was like, it's so hard. Why is it so hard? This, no one explained this to me. And he was wonderful. He was like, you know, it's people experience vision loss in different ways at different times. And sometimes it plateaus and sometimes it accelerates. And he was like, if you're ready to go home, you know, if you're ready to do something different, I can help you. There's paperwork, you know, there's benefits. I was like, I'm done. I really am done. And that's where I left my teaching profession. And of course, I love where I am. I love what I do. But if I had been more proactive, or those around me, or professionals that were working with me medically and, you know, in the workplace had said, hey, you know, there are resources out there. You can still teach, you know, you can be a teacher. It would have been great to know, you know, and those are things that I missed. And I want to make sure other people in the disability community don't miss those opportunities to keep those careers that they've worked hard for, or, you know, or advance in careers that maybe are more accessible. So that brings me to the point of I wasn't working. So maybe want to hand off to Jen, or if you've got questions about, you know, just those particular moments in my life.
I have all the questions, but I want to hand it off to Jen because there, you know, as you mentioned, there are certain aspects, Jen, of your experience that are very different from Molly's. In that your disability resulted from an accident. It didn't come on over time. So can you share a little bit, you know, sort of about what that experience was like for you and sort of how you started to conceptualize your life moving forward?
Sure, absolutely. So mine is very different from Molly in that it did happen late one night on a boat kind of thing, and it happened immediately. So my story is not your typical person with a spinal cord injury. And I don't even know that we've announced that yet, but I have a spinal cord injury at C5 and 6. So affected from my neck down, basically, and considered quadriplegic. So I went out with my neighbor at that point in my life. I'd bought a house and, you know, I told you I had my dream job and was loving life. I adopted my puppy, bought my house, and went out with the neighbor for the lake for the day. He told me that there were, you know, several of the neighbors were going out to the lake for the day and, hey, come join us. And so I'd had other plans that had fallen through and I was like, well, sure, why not? So I decided to go and I got out there and it was a fun day. We had a good time and we were out on Lake Hamilton. And then things went wrong. So it ended up being just the two of us on the boat because my other neighbors were done for the night. And he was like, I'm just going to show you the lights out on the water. And so we went out to look at all the houses and stuff on the water. And I'd gone up on the lake and, you know, was used to being in a boat and had done, again, all the adrenaline junkie things that you do behind a boat. But so it doesn't make sense that this is my story, but this is just to show that anyone can be me at any time. And so, you know, I had, like Molly said, I didn't have any concept really of disability. I'd known a few other people in chairs, but more in passing and just, you know, people that were acquaintances at school, but that was about all. So I was sitting in the passenger seat of a bass boat facing forward, and he was standing on the back platform facing the other way whenever he fell and just sat on my head. And so I knew immediately, so I had the whole bright white light, warm, pleasant feeling initially. And then right after that, it was a red hot searing pain. And what I knew immediately was that I couldn't feel my legs. And so this will go kind of to some spinal cord injury awareness as well. That was last month, but we'll throw that in there just for good measure on what to do if you ever find someone in this situation. But I immediately said to him, oh my gosh, I can't feel my legs. I can't feel my legs. You've got to get me help. And he said what I've heard over and over and over again from other friends of mine that I've met along the way, you're fine, you're being ridiculous. And he didn't believe me. And so instead of calling 911 and getting me help immediately, he chose to drive the boat across the lake. And so at that point, I didn't recognize that my whole body was affected. I just recognized that my legs were affected because I thought neck injury, legs. I didn't think about my arms and my trunk and all of those different things. So I fell over on the side of the boat. I almost fell out of the boat that night. And at that point, he stopped the boat and he yanked me back up to sitting. And I begged him again, you've got to get me help. You've got to call 911, get me help. He said, you're fine. You're being ridiculous. So he drove further in the boat and I fell over on him that time. And at that point, he just shoved me back to sitting again. I said, if you can't do anything else, just lay me flat in this boat. Just do not move me. Do not touch me. You're fine. You're being ridiculous. And so those were the words that I heard over and over and over again that night. And so we made it all the way back to the boat ramp where he loaded the boat. So if you think about a boat on a trailer, that's pretty much to your shoulders at that point. And I just begged him, do not get me out of this boat. You cannot pull me out of this boat. You've got to get me help. Don't touch me again. And again, I heard the words, you're fine. You're being ridiculous. So he picked me up out of the boat. I was complete dead weight at that point because I had no trunk control, no arm control. And he dropped me on the concrete from neck high, basically. And so again, I begged, leave me, you know, call 911, you've got to give me help. And he told me the same thing. Picked me up, he walked me around to the other side of the boat ramp and he dropped me again. And at that point, I just begged him, I need you to get in your truck and you leave me here. Someone else will help me. Someone else will help me. You get in your truck and you leave me here. And he just said, you're fine, you're being ridiculous. And he found some other man. And the two of them in the front seat of his truck, between the front seat and the console, they put me face first, head down into that corner. And then I heard one of them say, well, what are we going to do with their legs? And so they just put my whole body in the floorboard of his truck to drive me home. And again, this was with me begging for my life, essentially. Just, you've got to get me help. I was a drug rep in the area. I knew all the hospitals. I knew all the doctors. And I was begging for specific people in specific places, and I was not being heard.
I'm sorry. They drove you home?
Yes.
Okay.
So that was 45 minutes back to my hometown of me in a crumpled mess in the floorboard of a truck. And so my life had changed drastically, and that was the point that I knew what disability was like. But I still thought it was temporary. So we got all the way back to my town and I begged him again, you've got to get me help. You've got to take me to the hospital. And this was a key point. He said, I'm not taking you to the hospital. I've been drinking. I'll get in trouble. And I just said, I'm not trying to get you in trouble. I'm trying to get me help. Pull your truck over, call my parents. They'll take me to the hospital. And he just said, I'm not calling your mother. So then I used words I've never used in my life to tell him which hospital to take me to. And that was actually the point that he recognized that I was serious. And so he took me to the hospital. We got there. He told the paramedics, I happened to be standing outside. I've got a girl faking it in my truck. Because that was actually what he believed. And nice. She came over. She saw me immediately. And she knew that there's no way I was faking it. She could tell by the positioning of my body in that truck. She could feel the bones broken in my spine. So at that point, they got a neck brace and a body board and they pulled me out. And that was when I started feeling the pain again. It was whenever they had to move my body after being crumpled for 45 minutes in the floorboard of a boat. And so they pulled me out and life changed really quickly that night. So I was able to talk just like this. I was telling them what my parents' phone number was. This is who you need to call. This is what we need to do. And they got me in. They did my CTs. They came back. I was trying to figure out why my head was hurting. So it was taped so tightly to that board. And the nurse came in and this was how I heard it. Jen, your head hurts because it's what we thought. Your neck is broken. And my whole world changed immediately. I had no idea. You know, I thought maybe I had some nerve damage, something like that. I had no idea that I had a broken neck and how different it really would be. So that started my journey and it ended my career as a drug rep immediately, which I told you I absolutely loved. And so at that point, I went to another hospital, was transferred. They did surgery that night. They thought it was a complete injury, meaning that I wouldn't get anything back below my level of injury. But after my surgery, the surgeon came in and he squeezed my toe and I said, I feel you. He was like, what? So things started going right a little bit at that point. And so I told everybody I was going to be the one that was going to walk out of there and just had this attitude that this isn't going to happen to Jen Goodwin. I've got this. And you know, that was my plan in life at that point. And so, but the reality was I couldn't get my hand high enough to scratch my nose. That was my first goal. Like, I couldn't move my arms. I couldn't move my trunk. I certainly couldn't move my legs. And so things changed pretty quickly at that point. Luckily, I worked for a fantastic company. So I had long-term disability, which was really, really helpful for me. I was able to live on my own. I was able to live financially on my own. I should put it that way. I had to move back in with my parents at that point because I was not able to care for myself. I spent 2 months in the hospital early on, and then I went home for 5 weeks. Those 5 weeks were the scariest 5 weeks probably of my life because it was just learning life with a disability all of a sudden. And so kind of like Molly said that she didn't want to be seen. Whenever I went out in public, I was so afraid I was going to run into someone who hadn't heard about my injury and I was going to freak them out. So I wasn't concerned about how I felt necessarily. I was concerned about how I would make them feel and about how different it was. And, you know, I didn't know if people would even recognize me in a chair versus standing, you know, because you don't expect to see me sitting at that point. And so I called in sick from the ICU, by the way. My boss was like, what are you doing calling me? And I'm like, well, I felt like I needed to call in. I've never called in sick before, but I think today's probably a good day for that. And so I was off for a little while. And so for me, everything happened just really quickly. At that point, I did not go back to work at all for a lot of years. I hung it up and just, I told everybody I was retired. So whenever we would go out places, my niece would tell people that Aunt Jenny's tired. I was like, that pretty much sums it up. Aunt Jenny is tired. That is what the deal is. So anyway, so rehab was my job for 5 years. That's all I did. I went to some really intensive rehab programs in Atlanta and then just tons of rehab here in Arkansas as well. But then I got bored and I don't do well whenever I get bored. And so I had to figure out what was next, what was coming next. And so I decided on a whim that I would just take the LSAT. And so I did, and I got those results back and found out that I had enough to go to law school and decided to take that journey next.
Because, you know, law school, piece of cake after 5 years of spinal cord injury rehab.
You know, it was interesting there. I would hear students talk about, oh my gosh, this is the worst thing I've ever done in my life. And every time I was like, well, your life has been pretty good then. Because this is not so bad. You're doing all right. Pat yourself on the back. Have a good day.
I can think of a couple things harder.
Yeah. This is not the worst summer of my life. I can tell you that. So.
Well, and I think if you look at Jen's experience, she can tell you that everything happening overnight, I mean, she was hit with a ton of resources. Would you agree, Jen? Or not resources, but just information. Just so much coming up. It was too much to go through.
Yes, and, definitely.
And in my case, because it, you know, literally my disability, although clearly I was born with this, but the noticeable changes that really impacted my life took place over, I would say a decade, 10 to 12 years. I was thoroughly underwhelmed with information and direction because, like I said, I was not a compliant patient because I didn't want to have a disability. I didn't think it would lead to a disability. I thought this won't be me. So I was not actively pursuing more information. So for me to start the road to rehabilitation, you know, ideally, if a voc rehab counselor finds a client that's working, you want to keep them working. And in my case, they didn't find out about me until I had already quit my job. You know, I stopped teaching and then was becoming a little more active in going to my eye appointments, and the Division of Services for the Blind received a referral for me from my ophthalmologist. But when they called me, and I, you know, this speaks so much to where I was at the time. I had a 1-year-old, I had a 3-year-old, It was late in the afternoon. I guess everyone was napping because I remember being in bed and getting a phone call and answering it. And it was a voc rehab counselor who was phenomenal. And she was like, "Hey, you know, are you interested in going to work?" And I remember tearing up and saying, I don't have a career anymore. That's done. You know, that ship has sailed. You know, you're a month late." And she was very kind. She was really trying to talk to me. And I was like, I'm just not interested. I'm sorry. And this is where, if there's any voc rehab counselors listening, always remember, you don't get us at our best. And sometimes we are snarky and we are, we're not pleasant people sometimes. And, you know, you don't get us at our best, but you can help us get to our best. Yeah, Jen's always pleasant, but no, not me. But
you're both delightful. Stop it.
It took me time. Voc rehab did help me with some independent living skills, but for a time, I needed to be home with my kids. I needed to heal. I was exhausted from a decade of just being something that I wasn't, hiding a disability. And those fake it till you make it years, those are tough. And they take a toll. I finally realized, I was like, oh my gosh, it is so much easier to be blind than to fake being normal. But
oh my goodness, all I could think when you were talking about the lengths that you would go to hide your disability, you know, as it advanced, I just thought that sounds exhausting.
It was exhausting, not just for me, but for my family, because we were on lockdown with that stuff. I was like, I don't want that brought up. You know, what would my students' parents think if they knew, you know, someone couldn't see? I'm probably a liability for the school, you know, all these things, because I had recess duty, I had cafeteria duty, all of these things. And I will, you know, sidestep for a moment here. I don't regret much in my life, but that decade of hiding, I regret, because what better example could I have been to a classroom of diverse children, many of whom did have their own disabilities, than to have stayed put, to have shown them, hey, I'm struggling with some stuff, but I'm still here and I'm still working. You know, that is a huge regret of mine. And part of my passion for what I do is to make sure some other teacher or some other professional or skilled worker out there stays out there and shows others it's doable. You know, we are resilient. We've got grit. So yeah, I mean, that's, hiding is hard. And then leaving a career is hard because so much of our identities are wrapped up in who we are. You know, hi, I'm Molly, I'm a teacher. You know, I took a big chunk of myself away. I loved that time with my kids. In the profession of rehab counseling, there's a term called secondary gainers, where, you know, I was fortunate, like Jen, I did have the insurance, I had the benefits, things fell into place to where financially I was okay staying at home for a while. So I was able to kind of live a life at home and emotionally recover and prepare myself for what comes next. But I, like Jen, don't do well with being bored. Any former working mom that comes home, sometimes we're like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to be a stay-at-home mom. That is the toughest job, by the way, but I hung in there and I got my kids to school age. And once they were school age, I was like, okay, now it's time to reach back out to voc rehab. Let's see what we can do. And I went from being the teacher to the student. I went back and I got a master's degree in vocational rehabilitation because I saw where there were missed opportunities in my own journey with disability, and I knew there had to be a place for me to help others navigate this world.
I think that's so remarkable that's where that journey led you, especially since you first told your vocational rehabilitation counselor to get lost.
And I did get the same ironic counselor back. And
Really?
Yes. And she was phenomenal. A great voc rehab counselor can make all the difference. And she was a phenomenal cheerleader. And yeah, I would not be here talking to you today without her.
That's amazing. So you went back to school. You knew what you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Jen, you were bound and determined. You were going to go to law school.
I want to back up just a little bit too, and something that Molly touched on. I'm just getting flooded with information from the beginning. So whenever I left rehab 2 months in, to this new disability, they gave me a whole list of names and numbers of different organizations and people to call and what to do with them. And they kind of ran through them on my discharge instructions, but it was completely overwhelming. I mean, at that point in my life, I was trying to figure out if there was going to be a ramp at my parents' home that I could get in the door with. And I was moving in with my parents again from living in my own house. I mean, there were so many things that were happening at that point that I had no idea about that list that they were talking about. And they had also offered me, again, similar to Molly's experience, they told me, well, we've got a girl who's 5 years out and she went on to get married and she's working and she's got two boys and can she come in and talk to you? And I was like, well, is she still in a chair? And they said, yes. And I was like, then I don't need to talk to her because I'm not going to be in a chair. And so it was just kind of that denial phase for me as well, where I'm like, nope, I'm going to be that one person that walks out of here. I actually went out and bought high heels. It's one of my first purchases post-injury. So I was like, these are my goal and this is what I'm going to do. And so whenever I called Voc Rehab for the first time, I called and set up an appointment. And I went and I sat in their office and I said, I don't actually know what you guys do, but I'm here. So what kind of services do you offer? Somebody told me to call you. And so what's available? And so like Molly, I had a really good counselor at the time who sat down and was like, okay, well, tell me a little bit about your story. Where are you? What are your needs? What do you need to do to be independent again? And so for me, one of the first steps is being able to drive again, because I needed to be able to be independent in that way. And so we looked at modifying a vehicle, because whenever we had, you know, a week's notice that I was getting out of the hospital, my family had gone and bought a huge accessible van, like the raised roof 1997 old school van that you take on vacations kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there's no way I was going to be able to drive that. It was gigantic and it was not practical for me. So I worked with vocational rehab, and that was one of my first steps, was get a car that was going to be accessible for me. So I bought a Honda Element and they helped me with the conversion on it. And so that really made a huge difference. That was 1 year into my injury when I learned to drive. And so I went to therapy to learn to drive. I had to do all kinds of exercises and stuff to get my triceps and my arms strong enough to be able to operate a vehicle. So I was able to do that. And that was all through the help of vocational rehab, because I, you know, accessible vehicles are very expensive and it's out of the realm for a lot of people. But whenever I had that help with getting the conversion costs covered, it really did help me a lot with that. And so then I ended up going to law school. And I called them again. I was like, okay, you know, I'm getting ready to go to school and what do I need to do? And so unfortunately for me, that experience wasn't as good. And I talked to someone, kind of a gatekeeper, that gave me some misinformation to where I just believed them when I was told that they couldn't cover law school and or couldn't help with law school because it was a professional degree. And I just took that at face value and I didn't ask any more questions. And so I say that to say that that is part of what Molly and I do here, is we're not getting told no by a gatekeeper, that we're actually following the regulations of, you know, of the organizations and get people the help that they need. Because if I would have talked to the right person, then I would have had help paying for those books and all the things that go along with law school, because it's not cheap. It was a very expensive program, and you know, getting through all of that would have really been helpful for me. Luckily, I was in a position where I was able to go anyway, but we have a lot of clients who that's a no, you know, and it's a roadblock, and then they turn around and never go back to work because they didn't get the help that they need. So
yeah, and I want to cut in here and just, yeah, go ahead, Molly. You may be going where I'm thinking.
She brings up a couple of really good points, and you know, the support that's there. Well, first I want to say Jen and I were both in great positions that we very likely were going to land on our feet just because of natural supports that were in place with our families and with our previous careers. Like we said, we were able to navigate the world of insurance benefits. But we fully understand that if you're already part of a marginalized community or you're facing other barriers and then you have a disability to compound that, it makes it so much harder. And, you know, we certainly want to make sure that we're aware of that and that we address all sides of a disability. And you know, for any professionals out there listening to that, you know, it's always something to be aware of. There are some people that you just realize they can sell themselves. They're going to, you know, that they're going to be okay. And very likely they are, but supports are always an important aspect. And the more compounding conditions or extenuating circumstances, the more difficult it is. So I definitely want to get that out there. But also, if you'll listen to my and Jen's stories, there's the professional education aspect of it to get us back into careers that we were passionate about. But also there's what are called soft skills. Remember when I was saying that, you know, I couldn't stay on the sidewalk? Well, this is where vocational rehabilitation came in to help me and teach me those skills of using a cane, which eventually evolved to I now navigate with a guide dog, or just being able to safely navigate within my home. I mean, you kind of have to start with where you are. You know, it's not like day after, you know, I quit work, I was going to be like, yeah, I'd like to go work in the Regions building with all these floors in downtown Little Rock when I was bumping into walls in my house on a regular basis. So, you know, those soft skills are such an important part to have in place. So if you're listening to this and you have a disability and you're at home and you're like, I can't get out, you know, that there are resources to explore, to assist and make those tasks that aren't simple or maybe used to be simple, you know, make them doable.
Yeah.
And something else Molly was saying too, you know, I had some decisions to make. Once I graduated from law school, I had to decide, okay, am I going to really let go of this long-term disability policy that I have? I was making 66% of my salary, and it would have been available until I was 65 years old, or I went back to work. And so I had to, you know, make the tough decision on, am I gonna be willing to give up this sure thing to take a chance on working, and will my body be able to hold up to it, and all of the different things. But there are some other great programs through Social Security that allow you to go back to work and keep benefits for a while and, you know, not lose your benefits and that sort of thing. And so those are other things that I didn't know about that I had to learn along the way and get some more information on. And, you know, we're happy to share our experiences with that at a different time if you call us about it. But it was, you know, really helpful, and it gave me the boost that I needed to feel confident in going back to work. And another thing she mentioned, too, is helping other people with it. I worked at a different place before at Children's Hospital where I would have clients come in, and they would tell me all the things that they couldn't do. And then we would go out. I remember one girl, she had a shoulder issue. And so she thought she would never be able to drive a car. And so I took her outside and got in my car so she could see it and see how I drive with hand controls and, you know, how anything's possible with the right supports in place. And she left that day just feeling like she had so much more confidence in life and knowing that there are some things that she could do differently. And she just kind of had to change her mindset on it. And yeah, I always love it when we can change or help people see the possibilities along the way, mm-hmm. and whether that's in our personal lives or in our professional lives, either one. So,
well, I think what's so remarkable about what you two and what you two do, and why I was so excited to have you come and share with us today, is because both of you have had to go through yourselves, and so you understand. And I'm going to use this word knowing that it is a gross understatement. You had to make adjustments, right? Big ones, you know, big, big, huge adjustments. You know, Molly, I think it was you that talked about, you know, the big pivot. And I can think of few pivots bigger than some of the ones that you all have to make. And so now you talk all day with people who are at that point. Right. Like, you know, like they're either coming through transition services and they're entering a whole new world of just adulthood and, you know, and all the things, or, you know, or they're making a transition from, you know, having acquired a disability. So I wanted to see if I could get y'all to talk a little bit. You spoke a lot about how there's a lot out there. There are a lot of resources out there, but it's not always easy to put that stuff together on your own. Talk about what you all do now and how you all help people bridge that gap so that they don't feel like they have to know everything, because there really are lots of resources out there that can help folks. Can you talk a bit about that?
Jen, you want to take it or do you want me to?
Sure. So one thing that I feel like we left out of the mix too for both of us is the Disability Resource Center that are on college campuses as well. And so I want to make sure that we hit on that as well, just to let people know that when you're looking at going back to school, there are people specifically at each college are there to help with those situations. So I was able to get different accommodations that I needed, whether for testing or even for, in my case, making doors accessible for me to get into, having a bathroom that was accessible, and things that you think should naturally be there because of the ADA are not always there. And so we had to really work with the Disability Resource Center on campus to make things accessible for me. But one of the things I would say is you can call us. We're happy to help anytime as far as just brainstorming of things that might be beneficial for you. I do recommend getting to know other peers with disabilities that are similar or other disabilities as well. Molly and I have very different disabilities, but it's amazing how much we have in common with the barriers that we face and the sorts of different situations that we get in. So I always recommend, you know, reaching out to your peers and finding people that do have similar experiences with you that can really help bridge those gaps. But then also call us, call Voc Rehab and just find out what they offer. Go sit in their office and say, hey, I heard your name. What do I do? Or, you know, Division of Services for the Blind or any of the other organizations as well.
Yeah, I echo all of that, because one of the things, and, you know, I'm the first to say, I stuck my head in the sand. You know, I didn't want to know more because I didn't want to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. But unfortunately, as much as you want to think ignorance is bliss, it's not. So be informed. Now, I'm not going to say go research your disability or condition on the internet, because, yeah, you can get scared to death. But finding peers in the community, finding reputable resources like vocational rehabilitation for your state. Jen works with the Spinal Cord Commission. There are groups like the National Federation of the Blind or the American Council of the Blind. You know, there are numerous organizations out there who can help point you in the right direction. And of course, we are one of those, because, you know, your challenges are as diverse as your disability, and every disability has a spectrum. So, you know, with vision loss, you know, you can line me up with 100 other people with vision loss. We'll have some similar challenges, but some very different ones. So, you know, being informed is important, and it is a coping strategy to avoid. And I've fully embraced that coping strategy for many years, but it did a disservice to me. It did a disservice to those around me. So, you know, do your research and ask all the questions. You know, ask your medical professional, you know, ask them, and, you know, they can do some research and help you out.
Perfect. We are running, you know, we're running short on time. I mean, this time has flown by, but I want to make sure before we sign off that we let people know how they can get in touch with you. So Disability Rights Arkansas, you can call us toll free at 800-482-1174. You can find us online at disabilityrightsar.org. You can learn a little more about Jen and Molly and what they do. Find out about some of the services. If you are finding yourself where you are planning your career or having to change your career, or any of the number of topics that we've touched on tonight, these two are as valuable a resource, I think, as you'll find as far as knowing what's out there and how to access it. I also want to make the quick additional point, and I'd love for you two to speak to it quickly, and that is that you know, no doesn't always mean no. Like when you hear, you know, when you go somewhere for a particular resource and you're you may be told, you know, that's too expensive, we can't do it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, I can take that one. Okay, go ahead, Jen.
I just want to say something that just makes me laugh. One of my profiles says that I perform at my best after being told no.
So I believe that.
Appropriate there. Take it away, Molly.
And I think
people imagining that.
Well, and most of us, because of our disabilities, you know, we're used to the fact of maybe you want a second opinion. You know, that doesn't just pertain to your physical or mental health. You know, look for second opinions also when you're navigating resources. Again, it goes back to being informed. So if you're told no, you know, we'll, it's always worth exploring to see if it's a true no.
Maybe there's another way in. Let's just put it that way. Right?
We are born problem solvers. If you have a disability, you learn there's, you know, many different ways to accomplish a task. So, you know, just approach it from that mindset.
Beautiful. Y'all, thank you. Jen Goodwin is an attorney at Disability Rights Arkansas. Molly Hernandez is an advocate and vocational rehabilitation counselor. The two of them are my colleagues at DRA. I am so proud to know you both. Thank you so much for all the work that you do and for sharing this. I'm going to drop some information about the programs that they work with in the show notes, along with our contact information. But one more time, that phone number, if you've got a question for Jen or Molly or anyone at DRA, you can catch us at 800-482-1174. Jen and Molly, thank you both so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, thanks once again for joining us. I'm Carrie Michael. We will see you next time on Speak Up Arkansas, KABF 88.3 FM.